Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Tuesday, August 1st, 2017. With me today, I have John Martellaro. How are you, John?
Good morning. Very good. Thank you.
Good morning to you. And Dave Hamilton, how are you?
I am splendid. Thanks for having me back.
It's great to have both of you here. And we have, I think a bunch of stuff to talk about. So we might as well just like hop right into topics. So I think we need to start with the artificial intelligence revolution and how we're all doomed. And what I'm talking about specifically is this news that's been making the rounds this week, that Facebook had to shut down an artificial intelligence experiment because two artificial intelligences that they had created were communicating and had supposedly developed their own language. And now the world is freaking out, and Elon Musk is saying that Mark Zuckerberg doesn't understand the perils that go along with artificial intelligence. And we kind of need to dive into this. What's going on with this? What do you guys think?
Well, understanding of artificial intelligence best comes from people who are PhDs and who are working in the field and have an intimate knowledge of the history of the development. And while executives have a high level perspective and are looking at the long run, one must take the opinions of senior level executives with a grain of salt, because as the information moves higher and higher in the chain, it becomes more and more diluted. I think what Elon Musk is worried about is the long run, way down the road. When we speak of artificial intelligence, we tend to jump to the conclusion that it's an all-encompassing mind, a supermind, something like Lieutenant Commander Data or HAL 9000, something that can simulate the human brain but go far beyond the brain, do everything humans do but do it better, and thereby
or do it control,
be a threat.
Yeah. We don't want to say better necessarily, but differently. And
artificial intelligences now are very limited. They do specific things very well, but they haven't been brought together into a super assembly of a great mind. So artificial intelligence really should be called limited intelligence, limited simulated intelligence for specific tasks. But now that we're on that road, Elon Musk has a good point. I bring it up in the article that I wrote on the 25th of July. And that is, eventually, we'll get there. I mean, we're going to keep working on this and keep working on this. And what's going to happen is that eventually we will arrive at Lieutenant Commander Data, and there won't be any controls on what countries get to do this. Just like there won't be any controls on encryption technology or internet or anything else that's done worldwide. And so even though we might have organizations that, you know, support certain kinds of ethics, once artificial intelligence reaches a certain level and becomes global and used by bad actors to fool people and to do the same things that phishing scams do now and do all sorts of other nasty things, superminds will eventually become a threat. But it's a question is when, how long will it take, what form will it take? So Musk is correct to be worried because we've opened Pandora's box. But in the short term, not so much.
So we're really talking about proto-intelligence here. And
that's a good term.
I like that term.
Yeah.
I think I'm kind of on a roll lately with coming up with clever terms. I should be writing these down.
I like that.
So here's the tail end to, you know, here's the data that bookends this fun story. This is actually something that Facebook reported on 6 months ago. And the reality is the language, and I'm doing air quotes here around the microphone, that the AI systems developed for themselves that we don't understand, it's exactly what's happened every time, or pretty much every time, that artificial intelligence systems are put into these experimental scenarios, which is that they don't understand the nuances of English. And so they start communicating in what sounds like gibberish to us, but to them seems to make sense based on their understanding of words. So it's not that they had to shut this down because they were freaked out that the AIs were plotting, but more that this is just a thing where where they were doing exactly what they were doing, and it was time to move on to the next experiment.
And we didn't understand what they were doing, and that's another problem with artificial intelligence. And that is, I read an article a while back that says we need to build into AI intelligence a certain ability to explain their thinking process. Why did you come to that conclusion? Explain to me why you're thinking that way. Tell me the thought process that brought you to that conclusion. And when AIs can do that, then we'll have more confidence in them.
I actually like that qualification of, I mean, can it be artificial intelligence without the ability to explain its reasoning? I like that.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
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 Hey, Dave, yesterday we were talking about VPNs on the show.
Okay.
And specifically, we were talking about what's happened in China with Apple pulling VPN apps from the China App Store. And you've dealt with VPN systems a lot. And I just wanted your take on this.
Sure. Go ahead. Yeah. And I've dealt with VPNs specifically with China. I haven't traveled there, but I've had family members travel there. So, but what we're talking about, or what you were talking about yesterday, is new, and that's that China has blocked the ability for, or China asked Apple, and Apple acquiesced, to block downloads of VPN apps, or the availability of VPN apps in the App Store. And that, I mean, certainly, you know, there's a whole discussion to have about that, but from the, and I think you did, but from the standpoint of technical solutions, iOS and macOS both natively support several different types of VPNs. PPTP was taken out recently, but they support IKEv2 and L2TP and a few others as well. And what that means is, if you have the credentials to log into a VPN of one of those supported types, all you need to do is go into your settings on the Mac, either system preferences, or on iOS into settings, VPN, and enter those credentials, the server name, your username, whatever other things might need to go along with that. Sometimes there's a shared key or things like that. And then boom, you're done. And you can connect to that VPN. So while eliminating the ability for VPN apps to be available for users or downloadable for users certainly prevents one of the easiest methods of configuring a VPN, it does not prevent a VPN from being configured. So this is more of the cat and mouse game, right?
Okay.
It's that, yes, we've stopped one of the easy methods. That means that we've got, you know, less people that are going to be able to install a VPN on their device just because we've taken away the easy path. But generally speaking, you know, the people that really need a VPN, or the people that I would assume Chinese government or now the Russian government wants to block from having a VPN, they're still going to be able to install VPNs on their devices almost without issue.
So the process is halt, catch fire, test. Halt some more, catch fire, test some more.
Yeah, exactly. Now the thing is, you know, I'm talking about the technical possibility. Like, for example, when my family went to China, I set up a VPN server here. Actually, I set up several VPN servers here, all different protocols on my router. I have a Synology router, and it supports tons of VPNs. It's great, inbound VPNs. And then we configured those, and they worked. Some of them better than others, and in all of them in different locations. But I'm not selling a VPN service. If I were, I would need you, my prospective customer, to come to my website, sign up, pay, do all of that stuff, and then I could give you those credentials. If the Chinese government blocked access to my website so you couldn't sign up, well, then you can't sign up. And you probably can't access my VPN server either. So this does put up a fairly large wall, but it is one that, for people that truly need a VPN, is relatively trivial to tunnel around.
Okay. So what I'm getting out of this is the people that China is going to stop from using a VPN are probably not the people that they're that concerned about.
I honestly don't know who China is concerned about. I haven't asked them. If it's the general public, because they don't want the general public to have access to all of the news of the world, then maybe this is exactly what they want, because those people that are going to tunnel and find a way to their VPN are already going to get the news of the world. So if it's a propaganda thing or a suppression thing, then, absolutely, this might actually be exactly what they want to do. I don't know.
You know, as you say that, I bet you just nailed it. I bet this is exactly what they wanted to do. And so they actually are stopping the people that they want to keep from using a VPN from doing
right. Yeah, they may very well be. That's right. So and if so, then fine. But people will find a way. You know, the problem is that and they have to do this if, in fact, that's what they want to block. But, they block things like Facebook and Snapchat. These are things that people desire to get to. I mean, the dopamine rush from checking Facebook and seeing new things has been tested and proven and is real. And when you get in the way between people and their dopamine rush, people will find a way to get that rush, right? And it's not necessarily about, oh, I'm getting news that my government doesn't want me to get. It's I'm seeing my friend's stuff in my feeds. Now, there's WeChat and all of that. It's far more popular in China than Facebook could ever be because of this. But for those people that want Facebook, even the general public, that's sort of why that's one of the reasons that people use a VPN there now as it is. So I'm curious to see 12 months from now how this solution evolves, both from the standpoint of the solution providers that are going to offer ways for people to get this type of access tunneled around whatever new wall China puts up and Russia now puts up, combined with even the general public. I mean, the fact that the general public of China and now the US is aware of what a VPN is, let alone knows how to go and set one up and use one, that's pretty big. Yeah. I mean, that's a big change from just a few years ago. So I don't put it past people aren't stupid, right? You know, people, it generally, and I don't mean this in a negative way, people are just generally ignorant about things that are technologically beyond their needs. Okay. But as soon as their need is there, most people can understand the technology. It's just not that difficult. Mm-hmm. So, the concept of a VPN was needed and totally is understood. Now the concept of tunneling around the App Store to get to a VPN, my guess is that's going to be totally understood too.
Yeah. It's, well, considering how simple the description was when you laid it out, yeah, people are going to be able to do this.
Yeah, my family used a VPN that meets all the criteria of tunneling around the wall China just put up. And it was only because that was the easiest and most cost effective one for me to set up for them traveling there. I could have cared less if I told them you need to get to China and then download this app from the App Store for some reason, as opposed to downloading it before you get there. Yeah, no problem. And actually, my family would still be able to do that because Apple is blocking it by billing address, not by location when you go to download the app.
Right. So you can have an App Store account that's based outside of China, be inside China, and still access your apps.
That's, as I understand it, that's correct. Yeah.
Well, that's another workaround.
Exactly. Right. I mean, almost accidentally, we've talked about four different workarounds here. So, there's going to be more.
So China's going to need to keep working on that firewall.
Yeah. And honestly, I say that you would need to log into a website and then, manually enter the credentials. That's not necessarily true. You can download a profile from a website, and that profile can contain all the information that's needed to connect to that VPN.
Oh, sure. I use TunnelBear. That's exactly how it works. I download the app. It installs the profile for me.
Right. But instead of the app installing the profile, you could just have the website install the profile, sort of like the website the Apple developer website lets you install a profile to install beta software. Right? I mean, it's websites can install profiles as long as you allow it as the user. There's not a huge security hole here or anything, folks, but it's, you know, you will be presented, you know, do you want to install this profile? You say yes. And then boom, a profile is just a series of settings, some of which you could make on your own on the device, and you could have like Wi-Fi networks and things like that. Comcast, for example, will, if you visit their website, will install a profile. I don't know why my phone decided it wanted to talk to me now, but there you go.
No, it's okay. My Echo was doing it a few minutes ago. So, Dave, before we move on, I'm going to use something that a lot of people would be able to rate this to. Services that we're signing up for VPN in the United States that include an app. In my case, Tunnel Bear. The only real reason I need Tunnel Bear app on my iPhone is that it installs the profile so that I can tap the little button for VPN in settings.
That's mostly correct. There's some asterisks I would put there that the app offers some other things. But yes, in terms of the core functionality, that's right.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, we have time for one more topic quickly before we wrap up. And I want to talk about the solar eclipse that's coming on August 21st. And John, I wanted you here because you're Mr. Science. So the short version,
Mr. Wizard.
Yeah, the short version leading into this is that on August 21st, we're going to have the first full solar eclipse that crosses the entire continental United States. So my sentence got halfway backwards. This will be the first time in 99 years we've had a solar eclipse that completely crosses the United States. And so if you're in the right part of the United States, you can see the entire eclipse. So, or meaning you'll
it's called
be in
the path
of
totality, which is, pretty narrow. Yeah.
Yes. And like for me, that means I'm going to be driving up near Cheyenne, Wyoming, because that's not that far in the grand scheme of things from Boulder, Colorado, and I'll be watching it from there. So what I did yesterday was put together the how-to article that everyone needs so that they can figure out where and how to watch the eclipse and how to do it safely. So,
I think you got it all right, Jeff.
Thank you. That's high praise coming from you.
All the important links, all the important caveats, all the techniques to watch the eclipse.
Yep. Yeah. And so the short version is I have two apps that I'm using on my iPhone, Solar Eclipse Timer, and then the Eclipse app from Time and Date or Date and Time. What is it? Timeanddate.com or dateandtime.com?
I don't remember.
The link will be in the show notes. Don't worry about it.
There you go.
Yeah.
And now that you ask, if you had just asked me what the site was, I could have told you. But now that you ask it and offer me two choices, I have no idea which one it is.
Yep. I'm sure there's a scientific term for that. And I'm betting a listener is going to let us know what it is.
It's called aging. Yeah.
Oh, right. The other big thing is finding if you actually went to witness the eclipse, whether it's from the path of totality or anywhere else in the United States where you get a partial eclipse, you need to make sure you don't look directly at the sun. That's a bad thing.
Yeah. Even if the app that you're looking at says it's going to be 95%, don't conclude that the 5% left over is safe for you to look at.
No, that's the 5% that will burn your eyes out.
That's right. That's right. The sun is 200 times brighter than your eye can stand. And so even if you block 90% of the light, it's still 20 times brighter than your eye can stand, and there will be damage.
Now, So I have a question that I think you just answered, but I'm going to ask anyway. As someone who is outside of the path of totality, I think we're at the, I don't know, we'll see 60 or 70% of the eclipse here. Do I still need to get eye protection and all
absolutely,
of that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And your sunglasses don't count.
Got it.
John, do you know an ISO standard for the
ISO 12312-2 compliant? It should be marked on them. If you buy it from a reputable place like telescopes.com or Celestron or one of the other optics outlets, those glasses will be fine.
Yes. And in my article, I list a specific kit. It's inexpensive. It's like $10 for a kit that it's from Celestron that has two pairs of viewing glasses along with charts and timetables so that you know when and where to look, and the glasses meet that certification.
Cool. Thank you. I wasn't asking that question to be a pawn here. I wanted to know.
Well, Dave, I have another alternative for you that I've used, and people have thought I was some sort of black magic wizard when I did this.
Well, because you are.
Because I am. If you have a piece of paper and a paperclip, you have a projector for viewing an eclipse.
Yeah. So I remember doing that when I was a kid. Yeah.
And for those of you that don't know what I'm talking about, take a paperclip, bend it out so you have a straight end, punch a little hole through a piece of paper, and then you turn your back to the sun so you're not looking at the eclipse, and aim the paper at the eclipse, and the light projected through that pinhole onto the ground, another piece of paper, into a box, whatever, will be the eclipse. So you can actually watch it, excuse me, in real time, without having to look directly at it and without having to need special glasses.
And pinhole cameras are kind of tricky to set up and can be a little frustrating. And if you really want to enjoy the full experience, I recommend just go ahead and spend the $10 to buy the Celestron kit with the proper lenses so you can sort of look at the sky and see what's going on and feel like you're there.
And do you think it's worth it for people that aren't in the path of total eclipse to get one of these kits for $10, or is it going to be a frustrating experience?
Well, I don't think it's going to be a very satisfying experience if it's less than 50%, because what you're going to see is the edge of the moon go across the face of a really bright sun.
Right.
And it's going to remain daylight, and you'll go, okay, so there's a black piece carved out of the edge of the sun.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, so it's not going to be very satisfying. If it's in the 90% range.
You think more than, okay.
Like Denver.
So, yeah.
Then you're going to see the moon almost cover the sun. But you still need glasses, but it'll be a more exciting thing to see.
Sure.
So where you are, Dave, you may have a better experience with a pinhole projector.
Yep.
And I have a link in the article that I wrote to a web page that has really great instructions on how to build a pinhole projector. And
very cool.
You'll probably have a much better view of the eclipse doing that. The last time we had the partial eclipse in Boulder, which was two years ago now, I stood in a parking lot in an office complex, and I just happened to have a piece of white paper in my car, so I pumped a hole into it and projected onto the white concrete ground and watched the eclipse that way, and it was great. It was a lot of fun.
All right, cool. That's good. Thank you. That's great.
Sure. All right. Hey, we are out of time, so we need to wrap up. Dave, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And John, thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having me as well.
It's great to have both of you here. Listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.